He taught me, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
To infinity and beyond!
No crying? There's no crying in baseball!
This is Sparta!
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah!
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
Welcome to Know Your Cinema.
Welcome back to Know Your Cinema podcast. This is Vivin Matthew, one of your co-hosts. And let me introduce the other two. We have Jason Quinn joining us.
Hello, hello, hello.
And Devlin Clements.
Jesus Christ, is it 1996?
Okay. Yes, it is.
Thank God. I've been waiting on it to be 96 again for so long.
Nice.
Have we not all been waiting for the 90s all over again?
Vivin, do you even remember that commercial?
Actually, I do.
Okay. Just checking.
I am definitely old enough to remember that commercial.
Well, if you've ever seen the movie That's My Boy with Adam Sandler, they do that. They do a bit in that movie with the
They do.
That's My Boy.
You've never seen That's My Boy?
What?
No, I have not. When did that come out?
It's probably
is this like the Billy Madison era?
No, it's actually probably the best modern Adam Sandler movie.
Okay,
it's him and Andy Samberg.
Oh yes. You know what? I just forgot about it. You're right. I do vaguely remember. It's like a mid 2000s.
Did you see it, or you remember it coming out?
I think I remember both of them in a scene, or maybe it was a commercial. I just remember. There was both of them in a movie together. This is when Sandberg was still on SNL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2012.
Oh, okay. This decade, this past decade.
Yeah, I think this was like the end of Sandberg's run on there. Anyway, we're getting off topic. Let's talk the movie. Actually,
so
first, give a quick shout out to our social medias in the other episode. So if you want to find us on social media, Vivin, where can they do that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
You can do that on Facebook. You can find us at KYC Podcast, as well as on Instagram at KYC Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at KYC Podcast. We have a back catalog of 15 episodes now. It goes all the way back to the 90s. That's how many episodes we have. We have many, many episodes. And we have...
It goes all the way back to the 70s, technically.
All the way back. That's right. All the way back to the 70s.
No, I thought one of the movies,
we've reviewed so far.
I think one of our movies was from the 60s, isn't it? Late 60s, like 68. I don't remember, but I think one of them was. I thought one of them was.
The oldest one we reviewed was The Godfather.
That was 71. I think that's the oldest one we've reviewed so far.
When did Young Frankenstein come out?
76 or 77. No. Sorry. Mid 70s. I don't know when. Somewhere between 73 and 77.
Okay. Well, then we got to get a 60s movie.
73.
We got to go back older. We need to get older and older.
We will do that. We will go all the way back to Chaplin and maybe even the Great Train Robbery and maybe even that one reel where they just had a train coming to the screen.
I've seen that one. I've actually seen the one where they shoot the rocket to the moon, too. I don't know what that one's called.
Oh, okay.
I've seen that one too.
That'll be a very short episode if we do that one.
Yeah. On this week's episode, we're covering just like the first movie that was made in color. 5 minutes
and
long.
We're done.
There it is.
There it is. That was episode 25 for you folks. We'll see you for episode 26.
We need to just do that and just have it in the bag. So like if there's ever like a time when we can't record, we're just like, all right, we'll release this. It's like 7 minutes.
Well, Jason, that is not this episode, because this episode we are talking about a very special movie, which is The Princess Bride. I'm so happy that we're doing this movie. I think this is going to be a really good discussion. But before we get into it, let me give a quick synopsis. While home, sick in bed, a young boy's grandfather reads him the story of a farm boy turned pirate who encounters numerous obstacles, enemies, and allies in his quest to be reunited with his true love. This movie was directed by Robert. He was probably at the apex of his powers. He was just coming off of Spinal Tap. And I think right after this movie, he does When Harry Met Sally. So he was just...
Ah, you're forgetting one.
There was another one?
Forgetting one.
What is that?
Stand By Me.
Wait, Rob Reiner did Stand By Me?
He did.
Wow, okay. I did not know that. I'm even more impressed. Talk about a run. Those are some awesome movies. This movie was, the screenplay was written by William Goldman, who also wrote the book. By the way, he is a, from what I hear, one of the great Hollywood screenwriters. Like a lot of other filmmakers, screenwriters always reference him. He's like the Spielberg of screenwriters, apparently. The movie stars Carrie, how do you say his last name?
Mules.
Mandy Patinkin. Mules. Robin Wright.
Els.
Okay. It looks like Els. So, Jason, I believe you are the one. This was your first time watching Princess Bride, correct?
Yeah. Yep. This was my first viewing of this movie.
Man. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on this. But before we get to that, I think we should have Devlin start off on his impressions on the movie. So how was it rewatching it? And what do you like about this movie?
The Princess Bride is a fun movie. It's got a little bit of everything for everyone. There's a love story. There's action, there's comedy. It almost has the feel of like a Blazing Saddles or a Young Frankenstein type of movie. Because there's kind of tongue-in-cheek humor in there. And then if you don't catch or you're not, you know, thinking or listening closely, you don't catch it. The movie, how it's written, is just really well done. And everything's kind of fast-paced in the movie, and then at the beginning, and then kind of slows down as you get into the heart of the movie. The cast is really great. They all do exceptionally well in their roles, even though some are short-lived, more, you know, more so than others. And then there's little, you know, tidbits of characters in here that you don't know, like Billy Crystal is playing, you know, Max, the miracle man, the miracle.
I think
worker.
It's pretty hard to not notice and, that's Billy Crystal.
He's all in that
makeup.
Yeah, but I mean,
Billy Crystal's voice is so fucking easy to distinguish. As soon as he spoke, I was like, "That's Billy Crystal."
Well, I mean, some people might not realize who Billy Crystal is because you know he's not doing a lot nowadays. Sure. So if you're not a fan of like his movies back in the day, then you might not know who he is and how great of a comedic, you know, actor that he is. So it just has so much feeling and so much comedy going on. And I discovered this movie not late in life, but later than I probably should. And I was just like, wow, this movie is really, really good. And even like the performances by like even Andre the Giant was really, really good. Like and you, being a wrestling fan, you wouldn't think that a guy like Andre could act that well and do that character, because they could have just, you know, not gave him a lot of lines, but he had a substantial amount of lines in it. I love the dynamic between, you know, Carrie Ull's character and the Spaniard. I love that dynamic character, that how they interact in that beginning fight scene. It just has so much really going on with it. It's a really phenomenal movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's almost the most perfectly constructed movie as far as a from the standpoint of storytelling. It is lean. It knows exactly the story it's telling, and the movie both from a storytelling, from a screenwriting perspective, but also as a from how it was executed from Rob Reiner's direction, he got the tone just spot on. If you were to remake that movie today, I would say don't change a single thing. It has to be exactly the same. You don't want to update anything to make it look any more realistic, nothing like that. Like, some of the scenes looks like it is a set, but that adds to the charm because the story is a grandfather telling the story to a kid. It adds that meta element to the storytelling, and it's almost like it's, in a sense, self-aware of itself, kind of like a Monty Python-esque feel to it. It knows what it is, but at the same time, it both takes itself seriously, but not too seriously. It is self-aware, and it knows that it's playing with the genre of adventure, but also of romance, of fantasy and fairy tale, but it hits all of those notes just with the right amount of finesse. And the actors also, this is one of those movies. Sometimes what happens is you have a director has a very specific vision of what the movie should be, and then you see the actors are doing something completely different. They're either playing it too understated or they're overplaying it. But here, all the actors are hitting it pitch perfect, and so is the director, and so is the writing. It all just comes together, and you have this just perfect concoction.
I agree. I agree that the movie has that going for it. It really does. And you know, even there's scenes that are in studio, you can tell that they're on sets. And then there's the wide shots of, like, you know, England and Ireland, and even when they're climbing up the side of, like, the cliff, you know, that's Ireland. And but how they shot it when they first showed it was, like, you can tell it was like a creation.
Yeah.
But it has so many elements going for it that's so wholesome and gives you that really, like, old, it gives you like almost an old school, almost like Wizard of Oz type set feel to it.
Right.
If that makes sense, how the set feels. So I really enjoy that because you get a good element of both in it. And like you said, with the story being told to the child, a child's imagination can breed whatever it has envisioned. So when you're hearing the story, you're not hearing Peter Falk talk a lot as a narrator. You're seeing a story develop in front of you. So you're almost seeing it through the child's eyes, how he would imagine what's going on.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I definitely enjoyed the movie. I don't think I quite enjoyed it as much as you guys did. I think that the movie was a good movie. It was a solid movie, but I feel like in the very beginning it was really rushed. It felt very like quick to get to like after the farmhand died, and then later obviously he becomes the Dread Pirate Roberts or whatever. But after that happened, it felt like it was really fast right up until the point where they got back together. And I don't know, just that part seemed, I didn't particularly care for it other than the sword fight. Obviously, I think that part is, was really, really good. I thought that the interaction between those two was phenomenal. And it's, probably my favorite part of the whole movie, to be fair. But the rest of it just, I don't know, something about it just felt rushed. And I think it's probably because this movie's been like a very big hyped movie my whole life. And so I think finally watching it, I don't think that it lived up to the hype that the expectations I had set for it. And then like when they killed off the little bald guy who was a genius, you know,
Oh, Vizzini, I think his name is.
Vizzini.
Vizzini or something like that.
So many of the, so much of, like, the marketing and stuff for this movie includes him in it. So it kind of, caught me off guard in like a really weird way. Like I was like, oh man, like I kind of enjoyed his character. So that when he was gone, that kind of was like, I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. But I mean, like I think Andre the Giant in this movie was phenomenal. I think all of the you know, the, what is it? Three dudes that are at the end. I thought the three of them were great. They had great chemistry together. I think the biggest thing that this movie could benefit from me is a longer runtime. I think if they stretched some of the stuff out and gave you a little more information on some of the characters, then we could have had a better story, in my opinion. I'm not saying that it was bad, but that's just my thought process on it. I think it had a really good ending though. And it, you know, it was, and I, like I said, I think Andre the Giant was phenomenal in it. And it's probably the first really good performance by a wrestler in a movie.
His performance is, yeah, it's just spot on. Like I said, you almost feel like every character, even if they are not the main character, they at least get one scene or a clip where they get to kind of shine. Like whether it's Andre the Giant's Fezzik or it is, you know, Inyo Montoya, well, I feel like he's one of the main characters. But even like a Count Rugen, you know, there's like moments where he gets to like be almost like the centerpiece of the story where he has a classic element. But going back to what you're saying, Jason, you reminded me of the first time I actually watched The Princess Bride. And this was, it's been a while, but I don't remember how long, maybe 5 or 6 years. But even at that time, you know, Princess Bride was obviously it was a cult classic, and then it was just a movie that everybody talked about. So when I finally got around to watching it, the first time, I think I had a similar experience as you, which was that it did not leave the impression that I was expecting it to leave. So I was like, well, what is the big hype? I don't get it. But again, I think this is one of those movies where when you go back and watch it, or if it just happens to be playing on a channel and you just are skipping through channels and you just land on it, you end up just like, oh yeah, I know the scene, I'll just watch it through this scene. And you may end up watching another 20 minutes and it just starts to grow on you. And then before you know it, you end up going, oh yeah, one day you wake up and go, wait, I see why it's a classic. It just kind of seeps into you. That's how the movie kind of worked on me. I had a similar experience as you did, but over time, I just like, I would catch scenes of it from different, like when I'm watching TV shows, I'd be like skipping channels. This movie would be on there and watch a few scenes. And then again, I would kind of watch it here and there. And it just kind of grew on me over time.
Well, and it's like, it's a rare case for me where I liked everything about the movie, but I didn't like the movie as much as I thought that I would, which is I don't know if that makes much sense, but it just like, I thought that the casting was great. I thought that the acting was good in it. I thought that the dialogue was fantastic. I liked the tongue-in-cheek humor. I laughed quite a bit at the movie. I thought that the overall story was pretty good. I liked the way it was told, but something about it just didn't feel, it didn't feel like it was as good as the sum of all of its parts.
No, I can understand that. I mean, I understand the beginning part is super, it feels super rushed. It really does. And that's a problem for me too. I think there could have been a lot more, you know, meat on the bone for some of those characters, especially, you know, Vincini. So I understand how you're feeling there. I really do. But maybe if you watch it again, you would probably get, you already know what you're in for, so you can appreciate the little things a little, you know, more so in the movie. So I get it.
Actually probably the only movie that we've done so far on the podcast that I actually almost watched again before we recorded. I just didn't have time to squeeze it in. I've been pretty busy with a lot of stuff, and I haven't had a chance. And I do want to show it to my kids, but I haven't really, like I said, I just haven't had the time to get it in yet. But I feel like it is one that I would probably benefit more from, like, you know, future viewings and stuff. But I don't know, something felt a little off to me. but I couldn't quite put my finger on it other than like I think the pacing issue in the beginning. But I think it was funny and it had like a lot of like awesome adventures. And I feel like it was one that I think if I watched this as a kid, I would love it in like within my entire being. Like I would just love this movie because it has like when I was growing up, I really loved like Never-Ending Story and stuff like this or stuff like that. And this has a very like Never-Ending Story kind of vibe. And like in the way that it's told and like, you know, kind of like the set pieces and set designs kind of like not exactly as mythical, obviously, but like when they're walking through the fire swamp and stuff like that, I definitely got a Never-Ending Story vibe from that.
And there isn't a gut wrench.
Well, yeah, there's not. Yeah, the Never-Ending Story does have the fucking that Atreyu scene is fucking goddamn.
I haven't seen the Never-Ending Story. That's one of those movies that you know I've heard about forever.
I'm just
It sucks. It's gotta go. It's gotta go on a list.
Yeah, it is. Okay, it is. It's gotta go on a list, and it's good. It's like a great movie, and it is one that you should show Aria, but like not right now.
Oh my god!
Or like maybe start with like that the second one or the third worst one. Cause like you, it comes out of nowhere, and then when it hits you, you're like, "What the fuck, man!" No, your full heart—it's like the most Ned Stark moment before a Ned Stark moment existed. Like,
wow,
it's wrecking me.
Like,
right
you
now.
Know how when Ned's okay on the little chopping block, and you're like, "All right, he's about to get his head chopped off," and but you get that feeling like, "Oh, well, he's gonna pull himself out of here somehow." You know what I mean?
Right, he's the hero of the show. He's, they know you don't just chop the head off the hero.
He like you 100% knew with every fiber of your being something was going to change and the circumstances would be different than the way that it looked like it was playing out. that's the vibe that I'm talking about in this scene.
Huh. Man, okay.
But
so yeah, somebody either put it on the list or I'm just going to have to go get it and watch it.
It's worth talking about, so it should definitely go on the list.
Okay.
But anyway, I don't know. I like I said, I enjoyed it. I wish that Andre had survived longer to be in the movie that Billy Crystal made based on his experience hanging out with Andre the Giant. And so I kind of like I really liked his performance in this, and I wish that we would have got that movie, because I don't remember I've seen My Giant, but I don't remember it being all that great. But I wonder if it would have been better if it had actually had Andre.
Yeah, we got George Muirchild.
Yeah, I think it would have definitely been better with Andre.
Huh? Okay, I did not know the story. That's crazy.
Yeah, there's a movie. Have you heard of the movie My Giant came out, Billy Crystal? It was in like, I think it was like 96 or 98. It was...
No.
It's based on the friendship that happened as a result of them filming Princess Bride.
Huh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Oh, it stars Billy Crystal too.
Yeah, it does. Right. He wrote it and mm-hmm. it starred. I think he either wrote it or co-wrote it and it stars him. So it's not completely off topic when I bring that up because it actually has something to do with
it. No. Super relevant.
It's a good segue.
Okay. So, all right. So, I mean, that's understandable, your reaction to the movie, because I actually had the exact same experience watching it for the first time. I think we should talk about... some of our favorite scenes in this movie, which for me, I mean, I think every few minutes there's a favorite scene for me in this. Since Jason, you had the first experience of watching this movie, what stood out for you, or what was the scene that for you was like, oh yeah, that's the standout scene of the movie?
It's like the one of the first scenes in the movie, that sword fight on the cliff or whatever, and when he's climbing up the cliff and he offers him to throw the rope down, that whole interaction between the two of them is absolutely brilliant. It's probably some of the best, like, one of my favorite scenes in a movie that I've ever seen, because it was just beginning to end. The dialogue was funny as hell. The sword fighting was cool. Like, the choreography was awesome. It's a scene that during that time period, I had my 1 year olds like half asleep trying to watch the movie and fight me and stuff. But it was one of the scenes that, even though I had a lot going on while I'm even trying to watch the movie, it was one that definitely sucked me in, like, fully. I was very immersed in that situation.
Yeah.
And I thought that was brilliant.
That scene, both the actors, if you actually watch it, if you get to watch it again, they are actually doing most of that sword fighting, besides the crazy kind of flips and all of that.
Right.
Other than that, I mean, they really put in the time practicing the sword fighting, and it shows on screen. It's just beautifully done. And then adding the dialogue on top of it, it's just, yeah, it's perfect.
Oh yeah, the dialogue was so good in that. Like the whole, when he's climbing up the cliff and he's talking, and there's Skylin had mentioned that she was like, I just love the gentleman duel. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like they were fighting, but there was no anger in it. It was just like very calm. It was, you know, they were both trying to get the better of each other, but it never felt like they were really fighting. But they were definitely fighting, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely sized each other up as far as capabilities, both kind of verbally and physicality-wise. But it was done from a place of, like, kind of mutual admiration to a weird level. Mm. Like, first, with each interaction, with each exchange, they were both, each side, you could tell, the character was going, okay, so this is the type of person you are. Oh, this is the type of person you are. And they, like, kind of grew in their admiration with each step. And you could tell that they kept doing even in the fight. The fight had a weird trajectory. Instead of them becoming more and more antagonistic, the fight almost, like, made them grow respect for the other more and more as the fight went on. At least that was my impression of it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is. I mean, he mentions it in dialogue. Then, you know, it's a shame. It's a shame that I'm gonna
have right, to right.
and then the Dread Pirate Roberts doesn't kill, you know, Ingo Montoya. He just, like, knocks him out. Like, he could have killed him, but he didn't. Because he's like, you know, I respect you.
Yeah, too. Yeah, exactly.
Kind of like, but he hits him in the head. Like, I respect you too. Bang, knocks him out.
Yeah. So, yeah, the dialogue is snappy. The performances just hits the right, the tone is just perfect right there. It's one of those movies you can just, I mean, if you love it, you don't mind it playing over and over again.
No, I can, I definitely, I 100% see the appeal of this movie. I just, it didn't come through as hard for me as I know that I was expecting it to.
Right.
Like, it's one that I'll definitely, it's probably one that I'll probably watch again soon, even. But it just didn't come through quite as bad.
Well, what we probably should do is, if you do end up watching it again, at some point when we do, like, a future episode, maybe we could, like, talk about it on the BS segment, where they go, hey, I did watch the movie, maybe my impression did change about it.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I would, and I intend on doing that. Like we said, when I went over that, when I said that I wanted to rewatch the Tarantino movies, I plan on doing, you know, giving you guys a little updated thoughts on that as well, if those do change.
sounds like I'll have to do that for Ghostbusters, huh?
Oh yeah, 100%. That's a definite. Yeah.
Goddamn right you will.
Yeah. You'll fix the wrong that you did to us all those years ago.
Yes.
The murder.
All those episodes.
My name is Inigo Montoya. You ruined Ghostbusters. Prepare to die.
Nice. See, you do like this movie.
No, and that's what I said. Like I said, I like the movie. It just didn't. Yeah. It just wasn't it just didn't quite live up to the hype that I felt like it had.
Oh, it'll seep into you. It'll seep into you.
Dev, what's your favorite scene in the movie?
It's really a toss up, and there's two different reasons why. The scene where Andre fights the Dread Pirate Roberts, and the only reason that's such a favorite scene of mine is because I actually did that entire scene in a wrestling ring against the guy that was twice my size.
You were the Dread Pirate Roberts in the scene?
I was the Dread Pirate Roberts.
I'm trying to imagine that.
I'm trying to imagine somebody being able to be twice. Did you fight the Big Show? Like, that's the only human being that I could possibly imagine.
No, there was a guy. I'm only 5'8", so I'm pretty small, but the guy was probably like 6'4". So he was a pretty big guy. So, like, I just jumped on his back and just did this whole scene. And basically, like, he put me in the turnbuckle, like, a few times, and then, like, fell. I had him in that sleep roll, and he fell over quick to sleep.
That's awesome.
No one got it but me. It was only like a 5-minute match, but no one got it but me and him. I'm like, let's just do the Princess Bride.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it was funny. It was entertaining, like, to me. So that's because I completely stole that whole spot. But the tie scene with that is the Miracle Max, the whole interaction with the Miracle Max. I every time almost piss myself laughing at that whole Miracle Max scene. From the opening when they knock on the door and he's like, shut up before I call the Brute Squad. And Andre goes, I'm on the Brute Squad. And he's like, you are the Brute Squad. Like, and it gets to settle, you are the Brute Squad. And then just the interaction with
the wife,
you know, the wife and the, you know, Ingo and Fezzik and in there, and they're trying to help, you know, the Dread Pirate Roberts. They're trying to help him out. And he's like, he's holding them up for money and it's just funny. I don't know. It entertains me to know
It's been a while since I've seen a Billy Crystal movie, and now that I've seen this, I was like, oh, I need to like go back and just rewatch every movie of his. He's just so good.
Yeah, his delivery is really, really good. Like, he's got some really just like subtle throw in there, little like you know, verbiage that he puts in there.
Yeah, it's definitely a gift. So,
Viv, what's yours?
My favorite scene is, and I am going to cheat here, but I always see this whole sequence as one because the Dead Pride Roberts, he is, it's one after the other. He goes after the three villains. So you have the Inyo Montoya, you have Vicini, and then you have Fezzik. So all three of those characters, right after they climb the cliff, you have one after the other, and it ends with Wallace Shawn's character basically dying. But that for me is almost like a mini movie right there, and it's just like, if I just cut that out and I just play that over and over again, I'd be completely fine with it because it's perfect. Every one of them have just the right amount of humor, just the right amount of action. It has the right characterization. All the actors are perfect in their scenes. I would not change a frame of any of that sequence.
I think that's part of the reason why this movie didn't hit as hard for me is because how good that was felt like a conclusion to a movie. But then when it just kept continuing and there was so much more afterwards, and that was the beginning, I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I literally went out of the movie and was like, okay, did I start it at the beginning? Or, like, did I miss some shit? Like, what happened here? Because it felt like...
Did it Mad Max
like,
you?
A little bit. Like, I was like, but not in, like, not in the bad way that Mad Max just didn't make sense at all. But it just...
Right, because...
There was a plot in the movie, for sure. But it just, I had, like, this whole thought process of, like, am I watching the end of the movie right now? Especially because considering he died and I thought that he was a part of the movie and not just a character that dies, you know, 10 minutes into the thing.
On that part, I do agree. The movie does almost feel like it does have to kind of re-energize itself after that sequence because that sequence is just so stellar. It almost reminds me of like the opening of Saving Private Ryan, where, like, the first half hour is the D-Day sequence, and it's just so phenomenal.
Oh, I've never seen it. What are you
doing? You haven't seen Saving... Okay.
How the fuck have you never seen Saving Private Ryan?
I've never seen it.
Okay. Can you close your ears for a second? I'm just going to convey this to the audience here. After the first sequence of the D-Day invasion, it suddenly feels like it was just so good, and then it just turns into, it's a movie with a story. It almost feels like what you're talking about, Jason, like, oh, there's a movie after this.
Yeah, like, it just felt like really weird. Like, we got a conclusion to a full story, and then it just kept on going, and I was like, what? Like, it's almost like this is an obscure reference that probably neither of you guys are going to get, but there's a show, Rick and Morty, which I'm sure somebody that listens to this podcast has seen, but there's a commercial in it where they do this sales pitch for real fake doors, and in the thing, they do the normal commercial, and then the commercial, like, the guy that's in the commercial just gets in his car, goes through traffic, goes home, makes himself a sandwich, and then he starts up the commercial again. But you're, like, so caught off guard by what the fuck was happening in the middle, you're like, what the fuck is going on here? And then the commercial starts again, and you're like, what the hell? But that's what this movie, that's what that beginning part felt like, was like, okay, we saw the thing, and then, like, some shit happened, and you're like, okay, well, why am I seeing this? And then we get a second conclusion to the whole thing at the end. So it just felt weird, like, the beginning part and the in-between part just didn't mesh as good together, I think.
Okay, now I completely get where you're coming from. But here's the thing, just like Saving Private Ryan, once you know the story and know how it goes, then eventually it becomes like, oh, okay, I get it, this is what the movie is, and you accept the movie for what it is, but I still get where you're coming from, because I have definitely felt that. Yeah, within Princess Bride too.
Good. Okay.
Okay. Good. So we have talked about our favorite scene. What about a favorite performance? Dan, there's plenty to choose from this movie.
Dev, are you still there? Did you plug your ears for?
Okay. I'm here. No, I'm
okay. My favorite performance was probably Andres, just because I really enjoyed his performance, and I was kind of, like, pleasantly surprised by, you know, seeing an old school wrestler really nail the role. And I was kind of, I don't know, like, you know, I've seen movies with Hulk Hogan in them, and they are absolute trash. But so seeing his, you know, nemesis from back in the day nail it was kind of entertaining.
Nice. What about you, Devlin?
It's Andre, and it's because what Jason, you know, kind of what Jason said. When you see wrestlers in movies nowadays, sometimes it's just like, oh man, this is going to be bad. Back in the day, I mean, Andre had kind of acting experience, I guess. He had been on Hollywood sets. He did, like, $6 Million Man. He played like Sasquatch in that TV series, but not really acting as much as just, you know, physical acting. But so he's had a little bit of experience, but he got some speaking lines in this movie, and, you know, there was, you know, his English was okay, but it wasn't, you know, great, because he was French. So for him to be able to articulate that on screen and not make it sound like a wrestling promo or scream and holler a lot, he played a very gentle giant in this movie. Was really, you know, great. And I'm not saying that because I'm a wrestling fan. It's because, you know, you expect one thing and you get another thing. And he really did a really good job. So if I have to say, his performance is great just because he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, completely agree with that one too. Mine is, I think the actress' name is Mandy Patinkin, who played Inigo Montoya. That role performance always stands out to me. It's just perfections, like beginning to end. I have not seen him in many other roles. I've heard that he's been in a few other movies and stuff, but this one is just so career defining.
Isn't he in Criminal Minds? Isn't he like a lead in Criminal Minds?
Really? Mm-hmm. I'll have to do some research.
He's on also that. Yeah, this role, one that you might actually get to see more quickly. He's also in Elmo and Grouchland.
Elmo in Grouchland.
Yeah, okay. He plays the antagonist in Elmo and Grouchland.
Huh. All right.
It's actually, I mean, it's like if you have kids, like it's tolerable. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's very much because of him. If it wasn't for him, it would be like, all right, this movie's fucking terrible. But he's good in it.
All right. I guess I'll be crossing paths with him soon. also, we'll need to give out a shout out to, I think his name is Cary Elwes. I think the type of role he's given, and he's cast to play a very prototypical kind of role, but he's able to kind of do that role without making it. There's kind of a lightheartedness and also a charisma and just the kind of the right level of levity that he brings to that role that it works so well. And I don't really think there was many other actors he could put into that role and it worked. It just gives the right level for all the other actors to kind of come in and give their best as well.
Yeah, and I mean he is phenomenal too. I think he's in one of my favorite movies of all time, actually. Favorite horror movies of all time, like the original Saw. Yeah. Not the franchise, specifically the first one. I think the first and the second one were phenomenal, and then after that it went off the rails a bit.
But wait, that's him in the first Saw movie? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whoa, mind blown. No, now that you say it, I see him. Okay. Crazy.
He's also in a movie. It had it's like a 90s movie. It was had Alicia Silverstone in it. It's called The Crush. I don't know if anybody's ever seen that
before. I've seen another 90s movie that had him in it, but he played the villain. It was a movie called Twister. With like Helen Hunt and Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I don't know why, but I've seen that movie like so many times. Like so many times. He's also in Liar Liar as well.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, he's actually, he played kind of the opposite type of roles after this.
And as a weird thing, the show that I'm currently watching, and I know you watch it as well, he's also on there as well. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. He's on the third season.
Okay, well, I guess, yeah, I've started the first episode of third season. For some reason, we kind of stalled, so that might be a reason to go back now.
Oh, the season's great.
Yeah, he's in Stranger Things as well, too.
You're right. Third season, right?
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Suddenly, he's everywhere.
You're right. And it's weird, too, because, like, none of his appearances in any movies lead me to remember him in any other thing. It's only when I look up his credentials that I'm like, oh, that's right. He is in that and in that and in that. He does a good job in all of these movies and all of these shows and stuff, but I never really put two and two together.
Yeah. Well, that's a mark of a good actor. If he's, you know, he's not making you think of some other role. He's like, all right, this is the role I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, he blends well into the piece. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Dev, before I would feel absolutely terrible if we didn't share some Andre the Giant stories before we moved on to the next step.
Well, I'll give you the Andre the Giant story from this movie that I've read about numerous times. So Andre stayed in a hotel, and Andre, everything was comped by the studio. So after filming they were going through, you know, invoices and stuff like that. Rob Reiner looks at Andre's hotel bill, and it's $40,000.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
$40,000
hotel bill.
Hotel bill.
Okay.
So Andre didn't order room service. He didn't order movies, pay per view, none of that. he comped $40,000 worth of liquor at the hotel bar in a month.
You are kidding me.
No, Andre the Giant is one of the most notorious drunks on the planet. There have been numerous confirmed stories from wrestlers that Andre once drank 105 beers in a two-hour sitting.
Christ.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan bought Andre the Giant one time in Japan. He bought him a case of wine. And it was a two-hour bus ride. And Andre stopped the bus and said, "Oh, we got to do a piss break." And Hulk said, "Oh, did you finish a bottle of wine?" He said, "Bottle? I finished the whole case."
Holy smokes.
Those are just legendary. If you Google Andre the Giant drinking stories, you will find the most amazing drinking stories ever. And Andre wasn't an alcoholic. He drank because he was so big and he had, you know, giantism disease, that he was in constant pain a lot. So that really helped numb the pain of being as big as he was.
Oh, okay.
So he wasn't doing it to, he was basically self-medicating himself, but he would notoriously would drink. I want to share two more of my favorite Andre the Giant stories. So I'm going to peel back the wrestling curtain a little bit here. So in the wrestling business, it is kind of customary to show respect to veterans. So if you're walking into a locker room, you make sure you shake everybody's hand. So there's a very famous wrestler named Shawn Michaels. I'm sure you guys are familiar with him. So when Shawn first came to the WWF mm-hmm. back in the 80s, Andre was a mainstay there. And Andre would sit in the back and sit butt-ass naked and play cribbage all day until he had to go wrestle. Then he'd, you know, put his gear on and go wrestle and come back and play cards. Huh. Well, Sean and Marty, which is Sean's tag partner at the time, they had a bad reputation through the business. And basically, there's an old saying in wrestling. It's telephone, tell a friend, tell a wrestler. Because that's how shit gets around. It doesn't matter where you work. Somebody knows your reputation.
Right.
So tradition says you go up, you shake everybody's hand. So Sean went up and attempted to shake Andre's hand. And Andre basically just didn't talk to him, brushed him off. Yeah. Just would not talk to him. And Sean basically said, this guy's going to shake my hand eventually. So every time they went to a building and Andre was there, Sean tried to shake his hand. Andre flat out just brushed him off every time.
Huh.
Fast forward a year. Sean and Marty have a tag match with Andre, and they all get done with the match, and they come to the back, and they're all high-fiving, and, blah, 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 and he gets over to Andre and sticks his hand out. And Andre finally shakes his hand. And Sean goes, "No, fuck this." He's like, "I've been trying to shake your hand for a year and you've been blowing me off." He's like, "What the fuck, man?" He's like, Andre goes, "Oh." He's like, "I was just ribbing you." So for a whole year, he had just been ribbing Sean, not shaking his hand and just fucking with him this whole year. And then eventually he was just like, you shake his hand and it's like, "Oh, I'm just ribbing you." Like, that's just, to me, is like, to hold out for a year is one of the best stories ever.
That sounds like a pure Andre story.
Yeah. The other the last Andre story that I have, Andre so Andre would go to Japan a lot. I can't even say this without laughing. So in Japan, everything is very tiny. Tiny bathrooms, tiny beds, tiny everything. So Andre, of course, you know, has to accommodate himself. So Andre, I'm laughing so hard. Andre called Hulk Hogan and said, "Hey, boss, I need you to come up to my hotel room." And he said, "Okay." So Andre, being the veteran, Hogan being kind of the young guy, was like, "Okay, I'm gonna go up and, you know, help Andre with whatever he needs." And Andre, he walks in the hotel room, and Andre had, like, meticulously laid out the newspaper on the bed and had taken a shit on the bed.
What?
He had meticulously laid out the newspaper on the bed and taken a shit on the bed. What? And he had called Hulk. He basically called Hulk up to see his masterpiece.
What the hell?
So when someone asked Hogan, he's like, they're like, what did it look like? He's like, it looked like a bear had taken a shit on the bed.
That is insane.
So. The reason that and it's the reason why is because Andre couldn't fit in the bathroom. So he couldn't fit in he couldn't fit in the bathroom to take a shit. So he had to do something. So apparently the bed was the best place to do
so the that. Bed it is, huh?
I get, but he meticulously laid out the newspaper, and basically when he was done he just he would wad up the toilet paper and like throw it in the trash.
Oh my god, that's amazing!
Or not the toilet paper, the newspaper and throw it in the trash. So that and there are a ton of great Andre the Giant stories. I mean, I could tell 40 others, but I'm not gonna go any more further. But those are my three favorite Andre stories.
I'm so glad he's in this movie. Definitely the movie would have suffered a lot if he was not a part of it.
Well, I watched an interview with Rob Reiner, and he said, like, they needed a giant, and someone had suggested to go get Andre. And he was like, you can't just throw a stick and hit a giant anywhere. And he's like, they're not, you know, they're few and far between. So he's like, we flew out to find him, and then they found out that he was flying out to France, and so we had to stop where we were, fly out to France to interview him, and you know, get him comfortable with the part, because he never really done any acting. Mm-hmm. So he said he was perfect for the role. Like as soon as he seen him, he was like, yeah, he's perfect. Right. But we gotta hear him act. So Rob actually made a tape of the lines so Andre could learn them and be able to. Get the dialogue down.
Oh, perfectly. That's cool.
So Andre really took the role seriously because Rob said that he knocked it out of the park as well.
Yeah, 100%. Very nice, very nice. Thank you for sharing those stories. Those are amazing.
Anytime you want me to pop an Andre the Giant story, I'll pop
that's off. Awesome.
At some point in time, we gotta come up with an excuse to get some Sheik stories in there because those things are funny as hell too.
I have a Sheik story, and it involves me sitting right next to the Iron Sheik.
That's true. I do know about that.
But that will save that one when we have a chance to talk about the Iron Sheik.
We'll have to do like Ready to Rumble and just share wrestling stories or something.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I definitely have not seen Ready
to Rumble. I have not.
Yes. All right.
All right. Is it time for ratings?
Yeah.
Ratings.
All right, Devlin, you go first.
I'm going to give this movie an 8.5. Again, I'm with Jason in the process of the beginning of the movie. Really always sticks in my crawl the wrong way. But overall, I love this movie. The story is so phenomenal. The acting is so phenomenal. And then, of course, the humor is so good in this movie. And it's in bits and pieces. So it's an 8.5 for me,
Jason. I'll give this movie a 9. It is a near perfect for me. Like me and Jason talked about right after the encounters with the first three villains, the movie does take a bit of a dip before it regains the momentum again. So for that reason, I'm going to keep it at a 9. Still a phenomenal movie.
I personally think that this was a great movie and I expect this rating to go up in subsequent viewings, but I do currently believe this movie is a 7.5.
Okay. Very good. Very good.
All right. We hope you enjoyed that stuff. We're going to take a short little break, just a little teeny one, and then we'll be back for a segment we like to call "Get to Know Your Cinema."
All right. See you soon, folks.
Hello, and welcome back to Know Your Cinema, the podcast edition. We are now doing our second segment of this episode, one that I at least like to call Get to Know Your Cinema, where each of us proposes a question related to movies, and the rest of us answer said questions. If you are at home and you have some questions that you would like us to answer, feel free to send us those questions, and we can maybe one of us can take those questions and put them in here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So first to ask a question today is Devlin. Your question, sir.
My question of the week is for you, gentlemen. Who is your favorite all-time movie villain?
Good one.
Vivin?
All right, I'll go first. Mine, hands down, is the Joker from The Dark Knight.
That's fair.
I think he's the greatest villain. First of all, the Joker as a villain is probably one of the best villains ever created. But add on top of that, Heath Ledger's performance for that specific Joker for that movie, it just knocked it out of the park, and it's one for the ages.
I too was going to go that route, but then I knew you were going to go that route. So this was a really tough one for me because there are some absolutely brilliant villains out there. I mean, I love Voldemort. What's his name? The Nakatomi Plaza. What is the guy's name? Hans Gruber. Absolutely brilliant. And more recently, I think Thanos is an awesome villain. Yeah. Because he's got a lot of attributes to him that you kind of almost relate to, but I think because of I'm gonna go with a more modern version of this, and I can definitely see myself even disagreeing with me later, but I gotta go with I can't think of his name, Killmonger from Black Panther. For me, I really enjoyed him as a villain simply because it's one of the few times where I saw the villain's point of view and his motivations as being something that made a whole lot of sense to me. Like, I could see myself, given being in the same circumstances, taking that same route, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that might have been the first instance, one of the few times where I was, especially for the type of movie it is, which is like a mainstream comic book movie, but right. You suddenly was like, wow, the villain is making almost more sense than the hero's motivations. You're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. I can completely side with them. It's not in, sometimes, you want to side with the villain for the pure joy of just how charismatic or how how Darth Vader is just so cool and so badass. You want to like, oh yeah, of course I want to be, you just want Darth Vader to get the upper hand at the end of the day. Yeah, exactly. But this is not that. This is something completely different. You actually completely understand the motivations of Killmonger. Mm-hmm. And see that as like, yeah, actually, that's almost justified. You're not saying that you are agreeing with his actions, but you're completely agreeing with his motivations.
100%.
Very good. That's a really good one.
Dev?
So, much like Jason, I love villains in movies. I think that a good villain makes a good hero. If you have a bad villain that's just not coming out on screen as well as it should, then your hero is not going to be, you're not going to cheer for him as much. This was hard. This was super hard. I love Darth Vader. I love Lex Luthor in the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. I love all these villains, even, you know, Jack Nicholson's character in The Departed. I love these types of villains. But I narrowed it down. And the one that I really always, just every time I see the character, I love it more and more, is Bill the Butcher Cutting from Gangs of New York.
That's fair. Oh. That's super fair.
Very good. Really, really, really good.
And I love that character because he's so cold-blooded, yet he's so warm-hearted too. And you see parts of it in his life, and you see how he kind of takes DiCaprio's character in and treats him well, and then you see the monster that he turns back into when DiCaprio, betrays his trust.
Yeah.
And how he commands a room as a villain. So the scene in Gangs of New York, we've all seen it. And for me, is when Bill is standing there and he's trying to talk to the newly elected mayor, and the mayor's like, let's do this the democratic way. And he throws and hits him with that butcher knife, and then grabs his own shillelagh and just says, this is for you, this is you, and then bashes his head in. That's so cold-blooded, but such a great scene. So that's my top villain.
Oh, that's a really, really good one. Again, what a performance.
Honestly, I feel like all three of the villains that we picked up here are phenomenal villains. I would be comfortable saying that they're the number one villain for any given reason, personally.
Yeah.
And back that up.
Moving on to Jason's question. Jason, why don't you tell the audience what your question of the week
is? My question is, what movie ending would you change and why?
I'll take this one first. So, my favorite movie is Top Gun. So, there's a pivotal scene in Top Gun, and I know, Jason, you haven't seen it, so avert your ears for a second, where Tom Cruise is talking to Tom Skerritt's character, and Tom Skerritt says, if you need someone to fly with you, give me a call. Well, in the end scene, that doesn't happen. Tom Cruise just gets another Rio to fly with him. And I thought that wouldn't it have been cool if Tom Cruise got to fly with his instructor and have his instructor in, you know, his ear at the same time they're doing this battle in the sky. I thought that could have been changed for the better in that movie. But that's just me. I mean, some people might disagree and say there's another movie, but since that's my favorite movie of all time, that's the ending that I would have liked to have seen.
Yeah, it's interesting because this movie, I mean, the question by default almost makes you first think of a movie that you love, because only then do you want to change an ending even for the better. Maybe something about the ending makes you want to wish that, what if it, you play the what if game there. So for me, The Matrix is like one of my favorite movies. But one thing that I do wish that was a little bit different was just the last shot of the movie, because it would change everything the next two movies would do. So you have the climax of the movie where literally Neo is able to dodge bullets and he essentially resurrects. But after he does all that, and then the very last shot, he even flies. And for me, that was like, okay. So if they ever do any sequels, and it runs into the problem of, well, at this point, he's just so powerful. He has the same problems as Superman at that point, where he cannot become an interesting hero. Like, the first movie has such great places to take that character and such obstacles for him to overcome and become this great hero, and he becomes so powerful.
But that one extra thing that they do at the end, I was like, you can shave that 30 seconds and suddenly you have a whole different trajectory for the next two movies. So personally, storytelling wise, that's what I would have changed.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
I can see it. I understand.
Anything that could improve the next two movies would be great for me. So I mean, I'm open to it.
You're open for it.
I love the first one, which, man, I just did not.
Speaking of which, there's the next one. There's Matrix 4 in development. Apparently, it's going to be coming out at the same time as John Wick 4 is coming out.
Yeah, I think it comes out the same week or like the next week. Or
that's just, it's a canissance.
Well, truly, it is. I mean, he's got a video game this year too, just and I nuts. Think we're supposed that's to be awesome. Getting Bill and Ted 3 also.
That is true. Yep. That is true. What a ride! That's awesome. Nobody deserves it more than that guy.
100%. Couldn't agree more.
Yep.
Jason, right. What's yours?
Mine is a movie that you haven't seen, Devlin, so you'll have to avert your ears on this one. But mine is Interstellar.
Okay.
So I know that the original ending is not the one that they used, like the original written ending. And in the movie ends on a more positive note, that he gets the information back to his daughter through some fucking weird black hole bullshit. And I felt like that was bogus as fuck. And I think the original ending, if I'm not mistaken, had him just dying in space and failing. And while it is not an ending of promise, I think that it would have made the entire weight of the movie feel more intense. And I think that I think him failing in the end ultimately would have made it a better movie.
Huh, that is interesting. I'll have to, like, Interstellar is, again, one of my favorite movies, but I have not heard of that darker ending. So I'll have to do some research. That changes a lot about that movie for sure. Now, I don't have the same problems that you do with the whole interstellar communication and how he ends up using the Tesseract to communicate with the daughter. All of that for me, it was like, yes, there's some movie magic, but nothing more than any Marvel movie is doing there. Surprisingly, also grounded with a lot of real world theoretical physics that's like thrown in there, because you had a Nobel laureate, Kip Thorne, actually working. He was part of this advisors and also wrote the original treatment for the movie. So even though it kind of seems so woo-woo and out there, a lot of it is actually kind of based on hard science.
It was his brother that had written the original ending.
The darker one, Jonathan Nolan. Yeah. That makes sense, because if you ever watch the show Westworld, it definitely is much darker. I can see how Jonathan Nolan would have written a much darker version.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I remember I read some, I don't know if it was an article or something about it, but I don't know. When I read that article, I was like, okay, this seems like where it needed to go. Because to me, the movie was brilliant. I really loved that movie. And I can't wait to actually talk about it on the podcast at some point in time. But I just felt like the ending didn't feel right to me versus how good the rest of the movie did. Like, I felt like right at the end when he goes in the black hole, it just fell off for me.
Okay. You're not the only one. I think there's a large chunk of people who have the exact same feelings about the movie. It goes in a direction that they do not like.
Vivin?
All right.
Dev, are you still with us?
I am.
All right.
Viv, your question.
Last question here. So mine was, if you are, say, forced to watch one movie once every day for a month, what movie would you choose?
I can take this one. I have three choices for this one, because I would could easily see me watching all three of these movies for an entire month once a day and not really feel like it would affect me much. They're all actually animated movies, which I sat and thought and talked about this with Skyline about it, because in order for this to actually work in my household, they would have to be animated and my kids would have to be able to watch them.
Okay, so caveats. Okay, that makes sense. Good, good.
So I then chose the three movies that I feel like would least get on my nerves and that I could watch over and over again. And I think that a lot of it came down to the soundtracks of the movies, because I like the soundtracks a lot in all three of these movies, and that's part of the reason why I think I could do it. Okay. And the movies are Moana.
Okay. Good soundtrack. Great soundtrack.
Trolls.
Never seen it. Okay. I know one song from it.
And Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Totally see that one.
So those are the three that I feel like, and honestly, I've probably already done this with each one of those movies.
Nice.
So
yeah, it's a different question when you think about a movie that if you had to play it over and over again, that kind of changes. Like, there are some movies that are great twice, but there are those select few movies that you're completely okay with just putting it on repeat.
Right.
All right, good. What about you, Devlin?
The stereotypical answer here would be Top Gun, but it's not. Because I want to be able to laugh and, you know, have a good time with the movie. So my favorite comedy movie of all time is This Is the End. And I could watch that movie over and over and over again, no matter what. I absolutely think that cast is superb in their comedic roles, and it has a great story. And it just, I could watch that over and over again. So for a month, wouldn't bother me a bit.
Okay. It's a movie that I've seen a couple of years ago. It is really good, but I'll have to revisit at some point. Because I think I might have had somewhat of the Jason experience when you watched The Princess Bride. The movie was hyped, and then I watched it. I was like, okay. I mean, I see the appeal, but it didn't catch me the first time. So I'll have to give that a revisit at some point. So for myself, I actually have two different movies that I would choose from. I guess I'd have to choose one at that point when the 30 days started. One would be a movie that we've actually reviewed on the podcast, which is The Godfather. I think it's just a perfect movie, and I could just have that play on repeat every day, and I'd be totally fine with it. The other movie is actually a movie that neither of you would have absolutely 100% never seen, but it's a movie that I grew up watching, and it's actually an Indian film that was made in the 70s called Sholay. And it's a movie that has pretty much all the elements in it. Action, drama, songs, well, just like almost every Indian movie. It gives you everything in one movie.
Dance numbers.
This one does it right for me.
Dance numbers.
It got the dance numbers. It's got the soundtracks. It's got the action. It's got the one of the best villains in Indian cinema. It's got one of my favorite actors. And actually a kind of like a duo, so like a comedic duo. It has some really funny parts, some really just really tragic sequences. It's just like if you want one-stop shop of everything that you, every type of emotion to be in one movie, this movie delivers on that. So either that or Sholay or Godfather.
In English?
I would be happy with either one. No. This is an actual
Indian movie.
Like it's in Hindi. The movie actually was funny enough. I mean, to give you guys a little bit of context, you know how in the 60s they started making westerns in Italy, and those were called spaghetti westerns. Mm-hmm. So when they made this movie, it was heavily borrowed from the Western genre, but also the Italian spaghetti movies. So this ended up being dubbed the Curry Western. It was, it had all, you could see, I mean, when I grew older and I really got into American movies, I could see, well what the influences of this movie was. It all goes back to all the Clint Eastwood movies and a lot of the movies from like the John Ford movies. All of that is in.
Is there a dubbed or subbed version of it?
I'm just trying to get an actual good copy of the movie, and I've been trying for it. This is the problem with Indian films: is the older the films are, they don't keep a good record of them. So it's very hard to find a really good clean copy of their movies. If I ever find one. I mean, if you really want to watch it, absolutely, I'll let you guys borrow it.
Well, I've not experienced a truly, you know, Bollywood movie, and if it's one that you know obviously means that much to you, I'd be curious. I would watch it just on that alone.
On that. Okay. Yeah. Maybe at some point, way way out in the future, we might be able to do either a Bollywood film or some type of foreign film. You know, we'll do an episode or so of it. Maybe our 50th or our 100th, something like that.
Yeah. Or 25th. We're like 10 episodes away from that or something.
Or 25th. Oh yeah, you know what? You know what? Maybe a little bit closer. That'd be good.
Yeah.
That's crazy. We are on our way to the 25th.
I think, what is this, episode 16?
Yes, it is.
So we're like 9 episodes shy of 25 now. You know, I think it's awesome because I feel like now we're at a point where we're not stopping the podcast. You know what I mean? Like it's now like a full on, this is something we've been doing for a while. It's now very much a part of our lives and not just a thing that we decided we might want to do.
Yeah.
So I've researched Sholay while you guys were talking. Sure? There looks like, yeah, there is a copy on YouTube. Huh. It is super long, Vivin, you son of a bitch. It's 3
Jesus
hours
Christ, my minutes. Man.
But now let me tell you this: that is the average length of an Indian movie.
3 hours and 24 minutes is what I'm seeing.
Well, you got to add in all the songs, so of course it's going to be that long.
Holy
so now,
shit!
You know. When you go to a cinema in India, now I don't know if this is true still, but when you go to a movie in India, there is an actual intermission. So halfway through the movie, there's a 20-minute break or 10 or 20-minute break. Then you come back and you see the second half. Literally, the movie will stop and go intermission.
So this movie looks crazy. It looks like one that I would find either brilliantly hilarious because of how, you know,
is there an Indian in this movie that looks like Hitler?
Oh yes, they have a whole kind of parody scene of Hitler that he's like the jail warden. Yeah, it's bonkers. Like I think if you ever watch it the first time through, you're like, this movie is just bonkers.
Yeah, but, I would love it for that reason because it looks insanity.
But, you know, obviously growing up with it, I was like, well, you take it for what it is. You don't try to kind of read into it. You're like, oh, this is amazing. It's got everything you ever need in a movie.
Why watch other movies? Not at all.
Well, I mean, it's funny because I think there is, I don't know if this is still true, but as of like 5 or 6 years ago, this movie came out in 76 or 77. The movie is so popular. There's one, 75.
75.
Thank you. So there's a theater in Bombay that has not stopped playing this movie since then.
Since 1975, they've been playing.
It's so popular. Yes, it just keeps playing and playing. People come and watch this movie.
I'm watching it now. I had to. It actually doesn't look like a bad copy. So if anybody's watching this or listening to this and wants to watch this movie, I'm seeing a smoking ad. Is smoking a big issue in cinemas there?
I don't know what copy you're watching. So maybe.
Yeah, there is a smoking ad. I'm watching.
You know, sometimes we'll just have to, you know, that's what we'll have to do. We'll watch an entire movie and just talk about it on the podcast while we're watching.
It's so long, I'll probably know Hindi.
Yes. Oh, yeah, no, I'm going to definitely be proficient.
Yes, by the time we might be able to do the episode in Hindi if you watch this movie. No
shit. It's not a bad copy, though. You should definitely check this out.
Send
me a link of it, so I'll pull it up and take a look.
Awesome, guys. Well, all right. I think that was a good educational segment.
Yeah, 100%.
What do you say we go on break and come back for the wheel?
All right, sounds good to me.
All right, folks.
As you wish.
Very nice. Hey, there you go. Bring it back around. All right. And we will be back soon, folks.
Welcome back to Know Your Cinema Podcast. We are on segment 3, the Wheel of Movie Fate. And Jason, why don't you tell the lovely audience what movies are on the wheel for this week?
We have movies that Vivian hasn't seen, Friday, Frailty, and the animated Disney classic Robin Hood. Movies that I have not seen, Silence of the Lambs, The Shawshank Redemption, and Lethal Weapon. And movies that Devlin has not seen, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Gone Girl, and Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. Accompanying all of those movies on our wonderful Wheel of Movie Fate is a You Pick slot, where you, the audience, get to enter in a little poll that will be hosted on our Facebook page, and you get to vote on which one of those 9 movies you would like to see us talk about. So, the Wheel of Movie Fate is getting ready to be spun. Is everybody ready?
Let's do this.
We are ready.
Are you ready?
As you wish.
All right, we are looking at Robin Hood, the Disney animated classic Robin Hood, which I believe is available on Disney Plus right now.
That sounded shitty.
Did it sound true?
It did. I didn't sound like the normal Viv. Did you hear any of that spit? I heard a click, click, and it was like Robin Hood.
Well, I mean,
I heard it on my.
Oh, okay.
Spin again. I can spin again.
No. We leave it up to the wheel.
The Wheel of Fate has spoken.
Pretty much.
Well, there it is, folks. We hope you enjoyed our episode this week, where we discussed The Princess Bride. It was a fun rising discussion. We hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed the fun anecdotes that were brought to the table here. And we hope you tune in next week to hear our episode on Robin Hood.
And as always, go fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourselves. I'm loving it.
We're gonna need that. We're gonna need that this week. We're gonna need that. Go fuck yourself.
Uh-huh.
You can't keep holding that in the bag.
You gotta hold that up. Go fuck yourself. Yeah. The audience really wants it, you know.
Who really wants it?
The audience.
The audience, are they asking for it? This is what they're really clamoring for.
We hear it every day. I get at least 10,000 messages a day saying, hey, I feel like Viv doesn't love us enough to say go fuck yourself. And so here we are, just humble messengers of the audience.
You know what I think about that? I think that is inconceivable.
I don't think you're using that word in the correct sense.
I don't think you understand.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. Well, guys, I think that's a close. We'll see everybody next week.
Yeah, you know what, though? Real quick, though. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you check out our other episodes and check out our social media, facebook.com/KYC podcast, on Instagram at KYC podcast, and on Twitter at KYC podcast. Follow us. Give us a shout out. Tell us to go fuck ourselves. Anyway, we love you.
No. Don't tell me and Jason to go fuck ourselves. Tell Biven to go fuck himself.
Tell Biven to go fuck himself. He needs it. But anyway, we love you and go fuck yourselves.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.